start having me a ball. Cause I got a good feeling and I don't feel no pain at all. Right in my day.
Hey, good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. How you doing? It is Friday. Big day coming up, right? Martin Luther King Day on Monday, and we'll be here for our normal broadcast on Tuesday, the inauguration, and wall-to-wall coverage every place you turn. We will be covering some of it Tuesday night to the extent that far-flung facilities of Nova M Radio will be at our disposal. Yeah, right. So a big weekend coming up. It's a little bit hard for us here in Georgia to focus on the weekend. I mean, relatively speaking, the temperature in the morning here is expected to be 3 below 0. No, that's not wind chill. That's air temperature. And, you know, this is Georgia. So, my sympathies to everybody else in the rest of the United States who is suffering this global warming.
And tell our interested listeners what we're doing this weekend.
Well, we're going to make a quick trip up into the North Georgia, North Carolina mountains, you know, Saturday and Sunday, to take Molly tobogganing and snow tubing, where the temperature will be 8 below 0.
Yeah, I was just going to say out of the frying pan into the fire if it's not. It's not cold enough here for us, so we're yeah. going somewhere where we
where to be colder,
even colder.
Yeah, we went to the they call it the Last Chance thrift store today to you get some hellacious deals in there. Went to the Last Chance thrift store over here in Decatur, Georgia, this afternoon and bought some warm clothing. $3 for this, $4 for that. It's great. You start to see more and more so-called middle-class people. Kathy and I have been going there for, I don't know, what, 5, 10 years. We've been going there forever. We donate stuff there that, you know, we don't use anymore. And then we go in and shop there, too. It's a great arrangement. But, you know, you can get $150 sweaters in there that have been worn a few times for $6. You talk about a society that wastes stuff and just doesn't use things. Oh, my God.
Anybody who has a child that is not shopping thrift and consignment stores is crazy.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Yeah, you got to.
They outgrow it.
Yeah, if you have a kid and you're not shopping at a thrift store, I don't care if it's Salvation Army or you know, whatever. There are a lot of organizations that provide money, the money from the sales that go for women's shelters and this charity and that charity. But if you have a kid and you're not shopping at a thrift store, shame on you. If you're an adult, I mean, some of the stuff we've gotten in there, you know, Kathy goes in there and comes out with a pair of Calvin Klein jeans for $5, $4, you know, stuff that started at what, 90?
My favorite is when I find them with the tags still
the
on.
The tags still
they'll
on
be
them.
Brand new, and I'm feeling warmer already just talking about it. But what? I got a pair of boots today, Old Navy boots,
right.
Ski boots. These
ski
suckers
boots.
Are so warm, brand new. I got them for $9.
I know,
brand
it's,
new.
It's incredible. Is this our program tonight? What the hell are we doing here?
I don't know. Did you want to talk about Gaza or something?
I don't know. Something.
I would rather talk about cold weather and clothing.
I know.
Well, shopping.
Back in the day when talk radio was not this constant kamikaze flight, we used to talk about stuff other than death and destruction and George Bush, but I repeat myself. One of the things that caught my attention this morning, I am so on board for... Captain Chesley Sullenberger as America's most recent hero. I mean, I am so with that. What that man did with the airplane in making sure that everybody got out of there alive and only a couple got injured. The stories now, of course, are starting to come out from the passengers, and some of the reports, like twice he walked up and down while the plane is sinking, twice he walks up and down the aisle to make sure everybody is out. I mean, it's astonishing the way he. What was the airline? US Air, whatever it was, is immaterial. But And I think, wasn't that a Boeing 737? It kind of looked like it, the kind of plane that I fly a lot with AirTran. But here's this guy who does literally the impossible. Now we're starting to get the engineering aspect, the aerodynamic aspect, the weather aspect, all these aspects are starting to come into play now about that bring into sharp focus the odds that were stacked against the 150 people on board and this pilot and co-pilot and flight crew. Just unbelievable. Everything had to be perfect in order for everyone to get out alive, and everything was perfect. So, like I said, I am so on board for this guy being an American hero. And it's so fitting that on the very day when he is saving lives and demonstrating what happens when you do the job, and this is what Sullenberger is going to say. Look, I'm not a hero. I did my job. I was trained to do certain things. I did my job. Well, okay, that's right. But we know that he was a hero. On the same day that he does that, this rat bastard Bush comes out last night it seems like that plane crash was more than yesterday. That was just yesterday? Oh, my God. Bush comes out on the same evening and blames everybody, takes credit for things that never happened, invents stuff. Cheney, did you see the cutaway from NPR? Cheney sitting there nodding out. Astonishing. So here we have this pig bastard who has destroyed the country for 8 years, giving his little smirky speech last night on the same day that Captain Chesley Sullenberger, in doing his job, winds up a hero. And the comparison sometimes I question my atheism because I think this is like cosmic synchronicity. There had to be a divine hand involved in this, not in bringing the plane down. That was all human. A divine hand, a jokester kind of hand, a trickster kind of hand, who on the same day gives us, and the world, I mean the headlines around the world about this guy, this pilot, on the same day gives us Sullenberger and Bush. Bush exiting, Sullenberger saving 150 lives and his own. So, you know, to me, when something like that happens and that kind of synchronicity, I think to myself, are you sure there's nothing out there, Malloy? You sure you want to not change it a little bit, become an agnostic? And then I think, no. It's the cosmic hoo-ha, having fun. That's all. It's unbelievable, right? The thing about it today that caught my attention, though, and the story is starting to get to the point now where the cable news networks are just driving it into the ground. But the part that really cracked me up was Tony Harris this morning on CNN. Bless his heart, Tony Harris, who absolutely insisted on calling Captain Sullenberger Captain Chelsea Sullenberger over and over and over and over again. Now, you know why I did it? Because Mayor Michael Bloomberg on live television this morning, just like Tony Harris on live television, Bloomberg, when he's giving out all those awards, he calls him Chelsea Sullenberger over and over. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my God, couldn't one of those people standing behind Bloomberg just stepped up and said, Mr. Mayor, it's not Chelsea, it's Chesney. No, nobody could. So it comes back to live Tony Harris on CNN. And I kept, every time Tony Harris said Chelsea Sullenberger, I kept thinking, can't the floor producer or somebody in his headphones and say, Tony, it's not Chelsea, it's Chesney. So a little bit of... just to me, that's great comic relief. I love to see those kinds of screw ups because nobody gets hurt. It's cool, but it's just funny. That's all. Does that make sense? Nah, hell no. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Where you from? You sexy thing, you. I believe in miracles. Since you came along, you sexy thing.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's Mike Malloy.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those gnats in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder.
21 past the hour here. Pop Lewis sends me an email. It says, hey, MM, perhaps we could find the Mission Accomplished banner and now actually use it properly. Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. I said something else last night that I've got to correct about half an hour after we went off the air. And I'm sitting upstairs building the last fire of the night and having a glass of wine while Kathy and Molly were fast asleep. I remembered that I had said the only people who call my program who have a true understanding of the problems in the Middle East, Israel, Palestine, are Jews. And that's not true. And I'm sure it was very, very much of a surprise, a shock, and possibly an insult to the listeners who from the Middle East itself, Palestinians, Arabs, Arab speakers, whatever. So let me reframe it, because it was a really a dumbass thing for me to say. I don't know how it popped out, and I feel like a jerk. But people who actually are from that place and who have been involved, they have been involved, their parents have been involved, and now their grandparents have been involved, because it's been going on for 60 years. Whether they're Jew or Arab, they understand. And a lot of them call this program, and a lot of them make it very clear. And there's some incredible blogging going on, Jewish and Arabic, Palestinian and Israeli, about this issue. So, and that's one of the reasons when the jerk called me the other night, was it last night, that freak who called in and started to get in my case, I didn't understand what I was talking about, you know, and you know, I can't handle that. I really can't, because I have been studying this issue for literally for 22 years, and I've read everything I get my hands on, and the types of calls that I want on that particular issue are people who speak to the issue, and I don't care if it's speaking to the issue from the Palestinian side or the Israeli side, the Muslim side or the Jewish side, the Arab, yeah, you know, in either side. I have my unshakable conclusion about the situation there. I've stated many, many times on the air, I believe in a two-state solution, because a one-state solution, which is now being advocated in certain quarters, a one-state solution means the end of Israel as a Jewish state, just simply demographically speaking, it ceases to be a Jewish state. If there is a need to establish a religious state in the Middle East, like the Islamic Republic of Iran or the Jewish Democracy of Israel or whatever it is, that's not for me to talk about or to criticize. If that's what the people want, that's what the people get. It becomes an issue of criticism when other people by the thousands have to die in order for that state to be established. That's when it becomes and maintained. That's when it becomes an issue that I can't ignore. So an apology to all the people that I may have offended last night with that statement that the only ones who truly understand that issue are Jewish people. That is simply not true. Simply not true. From Seattle, listener who calls himself Cato the Younger Younger. Mike, the pilot saved the passengers, talking about Sullenberger, because he knew what he was doing. He was an expert, a professional, a hero for no other reason than he was doing exactly what his job required him to do. He was not a horse judge flying the plane, he's referring to Brownie, because he has friends in the right places in the airline company. He was a pilot because he knew how to fly and handle emergencies. He did not have to torture one of his passengers to find out what to do. He did not have to hope his co-pilot would step in and save his ass. This is the clearest contrast with Bush I can think of. Ironic, the two happened on the same day. Oh, my goodness. He sent this at 1 o'clock this afternoon, and here I basically said the same thing just a couple of minutes ago. Well, that's odd, isn't it? Yeah, that is so true. To me, the contrast between Chesney Sullenberger and George W. Bush, or anyone in the Bush administration, is etched into granite with hydrochloric acid, the difference between an American who understands his job, does his job, and as a result of doing his job, people are better off for it. And on the other hand, someone who does not understand his job, someone who doesn't give a goddamn about his job, and someone who, when he leaves his job, everybody is worse off for it. You get the point, I'm sure. This is Nova M.
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. As you know, Nova M is in just a whole bunch of cities, Nova M Network, in addition to the fact that we have pretty good coverage through Sirius and XM and the internet and yada, yada, yada. And of course, as you also know, if you're a regular listener, one of the cities that we have a huge presence is Phoenix. There is going to be a special listener event for 1190 Nova M. Is it still 1190? Yeah, I guess it is. Nova M this Tuesday. Listeners, this Tuesday, January 20th, starting at 9 a.m. Obviously, what Tuesday is Inauguration Day. It's going to be in downtown Phoenix. Matter of fact, one of the people who are putting this together is our engineer back in Phoenix, Ian Huff. Ian, are you there?
Yeah, Mike. Hi. How's it going?
It's going great.
Good. Yeah, we're using a new microphone here, and I can never tell whether or not this thing sounds right or not. So
it sounds like you're in the same room.
Okay, good. Good deal.
All right, now, what's the deal in Phoenix? 9 a.m.?
Yeah, it's going to start because it's 10 a.m. Noontime Eastern is 10 a.m. Phoenix time.
I got
so
you.
We're going to start at 9 a.m. It's going to be at the, where is this, the Matador Restaurant. It is downtown right off the light rail extension there at First Street and Adams.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do like a, what do they call that, a continental breakfast. We'll have free coffee, danishes, muffins, and stuff like that. And then we'll be there. Everybody will be there. Doc will be there, Dr. Mike Newcomb. Sean Ryan, all the weekend hosts, and including myself, all the Nova M staff, Mari, Norma, Erica, Dave, Ron, we'll all be there. So it's going to be a good time.
Hey, Ian, is it cold up there?
Not here. No, it's not.
Right,
it's
no, that like, was.
Do you go to thrift stores ever?
That's just Kathy being a Kathy's.
I got
being,
a great deal at the, hey, at the thrift store.
Yo,
the other
yo,
day.
That's just Kathy being a smartass. You don't have to answer those kinds of questions.
Actually, summertime officially started today. I had to turn the pilot light off my gas furnace for my apartment because it was keeping my apartment too warm. So there you go. I know I'm exciting and exciting, Mike. Yeah.
All right. So
Tuesday morning, 9 a.m., all our Phoenix listeners and all our West Coast listeners that come to town, don't have anything better to do, join us Tuesday morning at the Matador Restaurant downtown here in Phoenix, 9 a.m. That should be a good time.
Now, is the coffee is free?
Yes,
and,
free.
And the Danish are free?
Free. That's what it says. So I guess if it isn't, I'm buying right. everybody a bunch of Danish.
Boy, you got that right. All right, Ian. All right, good.
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, let us know how it goes.
No problem.
If you're associated with any of our other affiliates and have some sort of an event going and you would like to tell us about it, you have about, oh my God, is Mike still open? You have about 2.5 hours left to do it, all right? We are being way too casual tonight. Let's get back to the really horrible stuff. Our regular email here from Prairie 2. Our economics correspondent who writes, Mike, U.S. companies announced today 40,000 more layoffs. That's today alone. This included companies that produce things that Republicans view as luxuries for the middle class, things like pharmaceuticals, health insurance, and food. Citibank appears to be avoiding collapse for now by splitting into two parts, a good assets part and a risky assets part, or really worthless assets part. Guess which half the Saudis will own and which half the U.S. taxpayers will own. The word from Fed Chairman Bernanke is that the Bush policy of not nationalizing the banks is no longer viable since it is mathematically impossible to inject enough money into these so-called too-big-to-fail banks to make them able to resume banking operations. Let me repeat what Prairie 2 wrote here. The word from Fed Chairman Bernanke is that the Bush policy of not nationalizing the banks is no longer viable since it is mathematically impossible to inject enough money into these too-big-to-fail banks to make them able to resume banking operations. The Bush crime family had attempted to control the problem by giving money to the healthy banks so that they could acquire the sick banks, but there aren't any healthy ones anymore. It appears, Prairie 2 writes, that they will undertake a whole host of complicated schemes to have the government assume the ever-mounting pile of worthless assets in such a way that the average taxpayer is completely unaware of what they are doing to us. Homeless advocates are saying that unless something dramatic is done now, the number of homeless will increase from 3.5 million to 5 million by year's end. Public schools are required to count the number of homeless students, and are saying that the Bush crime family has been dramatically understating the true number of homeless families. Too bad the American people aren't an institution, quote, too big to fail, end quote. P.S. It's been 35 below here two nights in a row. Actual temp, not wind chill. We've started something with the weather here, I guess, tonight. But I wasn't aware that Ben Bernanke said that the idea of not nationalizing the banks is no longer viable. I'm all for it. I've said before, the idea of democratic socialism is desperately needed in this country. The financial industry, in every aspect, should be nationalized. The banks, the mortgage companies, the brokerage houses, all of it. They can still function. Let's face it, though. Wall Street, the New York Stock Exchange, playing the stock exchange, has become nothing but a huge casino. No jobs are created that way except for the people who play this skin game in New York on Wall Street. Fortunes are made and lost, not theirs. The poor bastards out here on so-called Main Street, who watch the stock market go up 500 points, down 1,000, up 200, down 700. And in the meantime, they are having everything they own smashed and grabbed by the traders and the speculators and the short sellers and the commodities future traders and all these people who are jerking everything around because the system allows them to. So, yeah, nationalize the banks, nationalize transportation, nationalize energy production and distribution. What else? What was the other? Nationalize healthcare. Take those four out of the speculators' hands and the profit makers' hands, the ones who make profit at everyone else's expense. The American public does not benefit. None of us do. From having companies in the healthcare industry. How would we possibly benefit? We do not. The banking industry, benefit? Take a look at it. The mortgage industry, benefit? Take a look at it. And you know what's coming next, and you know this is going to happen. This one's coming at us, and Prairie 2 has been talking about this, and our caller, I forget his name, the guy that calls in once in a while, who also works in refi and in the financial industry. You know the avalanche that's approaching is credit card debt. As more and more and more people simply cannot afford 19% or 29% interest because they missed a payment. As that continues, and this trickery, what is it now? You can have, you shouldn't, but you can have, whatever you want to do. I shouldn't say you shouldn't. The people have 5 credit cards, and they're carrying healthy or unhealthy balances on each one. And they're operating at, say, 8 or 9 or 10% a credit card interest, or 11 or 12%. And they screw up one payment on one card, then all of them can go to 29%. Boom! Now, how did that become law? Huh? Who was it that helped get that through? Was that Joe Biden? So once the credit card debacle bursts like a pustule on somebody's face, then there's going to be some real trouble, as if there isn't now. I hope that Barack Obama can handle what 25 years of Republican destruction has done to this country. I hope he can handle it. Aside from all the international crimes that these bastards have committed, what they've done to this country, my God, I hope he can handle it. I hope he can. You know what? I hope you and I can handle it. I hope you and I have the courage, fortitude, the willingness to help people who are going to desperately need help. I hope we can dump the idea that greed is good, because greed is not good. It never has been. It's one of the 7 deadly sins. We all know that. But you're an atheist, Mike. Oh, get out of my face. There are acts against humanity that, you know, for lack of a better word, call them sins. Of course they're sins. They're crimes. So I hope you and I can handle what's coming. I really, really do.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Text 10 before the hour, Prairie 2 says, to clarify, I guess I wasn't very clear, Bernanke didn't come right out and say nationalize the banks. Rather, he said the Bush plan was no longer going to be used, and that was the policy of not nationalizing. The stockholders, the Saudis, will continue to own the banks. The schemes he is outlining only nationalize the crap. Well, yeah, right, exactly. I think we got it, Prairie 2. It's very typical in this country. You nationalize or socialize the losses, you privatize the profits. That's just the way the capitalist owner class, the exploitative predatory capitalist owner class operates. Always has, always will. It is their nature, just like it is the nature of a scorpion to sting to death anything that it comes in contact with. The situation in California might be a harbinger of what's coming. I keep hearing about this, but the California state controller, John Chang, announced that his office is going to suspend almost $4 billion in payments owed to Californians starting February 1st. And that's a result of the state's cash crisis. Student grants are also affected. Everything is going to stop. In the LA Times, it says John Chang announced today, that his office would suspend tax refunds, welfare checks, student grants, and other payments owed to Californians starting February 1 as a result of the state's cash crisis. Now, think about the state income tax refunds. If you have one coming, the last I heard on this story, until I got this in the LA Times, the last I heard was that the state of California is going to issue IOUs. Son of a bitch. You know, the value of an IOU issued by the state of California, a bankrupt state, is going to be about the same as all that Confederate money a lot of these geeks down here in the South have been holding on to for 150 years. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I still got money from issue down there in Birmingham.
Oh, no. We still have people like that here. Trust me.
South's going to rise again, boy.
Yeah. Mr. Chang said he had no choice but to stop making some $3.7 billion in payments. In the absence of action by the governor and lawmakers to close the state's nearly $42 billion budget deficit, more than half of those payments are tax refunds. Taxation without refund. Is that like taxation without representation or something? I mean, is there any parallel there? Go ahead. You can finish the thought. I'm not going to say it. The controller said the suspended payments could be rolled into IOUs if California still lacks sufficient cash to pay its bills come March or April. Could be. Oh, so the IOU thing is not a done deal. The people in California may just be screwed. But maybe you'll get an IOU. Chang at a news conference said, quote, I take this action with great reluctance, end quote, but he said without action to close the deficit, quote, there is no way to make it through February unscathed, end quote. What does that mean? No way to make it through February unscathed. You're going to scathe an awful lot of people, Mr. Chang. Chang, what do you mean unscathed? Who are you talking about? You are scathing everybody, welfare recipients, tax refund people are expecting, how do you say that? Student grants, all kinds of stuff. Unscathed? The payments to be frozen include nearly $2 billion in tax refunds, $300 million in cash grants for needy families, including the aged, the blind, and the disabled, and $13 million in grants for college students. You want to know how bad it is here in the United States of America? There you go. How many other states are that close to a total economic meltdown? In other words, a failed state. How close? How long ago was it when we were hearing about the economy of California? If California were a nation, it would be what? The 7th, 9th, 12th, 3rd, 18th, whatever it was, largest economy on earth. What happened? What happened to California? What happened to the United States? What the hell happened? And the Republicans and the Bush bastards want to blame this on, you know, that Acorn agency who insisted back in the 70s that low-income people would have home loans. That's what caused it. They do. Kay in San Francisco, ever the optimist, and I love her optimism. She writes, "Hi, Mike. I posted this item on your discussion board and got some feedback that it was a good idea, so I thought I'd pass it along to you. Last weekend, I put away all the Christmas decorations, but decided to keep the lights on the front of my house up. I'm not going to turn them on now, but on January 20th, I will let them shine all day and all night long. If any of the truth seekers out there are late with decorating after the holidays, they might like to do this too. Just thought I'd put it out there so you could pass it along if you think there would be interest. After 8 years under war criminals, Eric Holder's statement yesterday about clearly defining waterboarding as torture is hopeful, isn't it?" Yeah, and Kay in San Francisco. And you know what's so sad, Kay and everybody else? You know what's so sad? That an attorney general nominee has to sit there and tell a congressional committee considering his confirmation that, yes, torture, waterboarding's torture, torture's illegal. He has to tell them that. How far have we fallen, huh? We'll be back. Stay with us, all right? It's too cold down here in the buckle of the Bible Belt to complete the program alone, so stick around. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. Michael in Coburg, Oregon writes, I love the subject line, bookends. George W. Bush's presidency, ? Began with a commercial aircraft incident, 9/11, and then ended yesterday with another. As you pointed out, the difference in competency is signal, but also this. The name of the ferry that picked up many of the passengers was the Thomas Jefferson. I think the universe is conscious and does have a sense of humor. Bush was upstaged by competency and the real nature of our founding fathers. And I think Obama is up to it. I think we are as well. Michael. I hope so. I hope we're up to it because this is, this is different from the 30s when the population of the United States was what, 100 million? And with all the horror that was going on, in addition to the depression, you know, let's not forget, the Dust Bowl. Let's not forget the pictures painted in Grapes of Wrath, Steinbeck's novel. Let's not forget all of that. But there were still places to go and ways to start over, right? I wish I felt a little bit more courageous. Maybe it's just because it's cold out tonight. But then you see stories like this from television station KTBS. Bob sent this in. A man who said, this is in Shreveport, Louisiana, a man who said he robbed a downtown Shreveport bank because he was out of a job and hungry has been sentenced to 15 years in prison for first-degree robbery. Roy Brown, 54, pleaded guilty in Caddo District Court to robbing the Capital One Bank in December 2007. Brown admitted walking up to a teller with one of his hands under his jacket and telling her it was a stick-up. The teller handed the man three stacks of bills. He took a single $100 bill, told her he was homeless, left the rest of the money on the counter, and walked out. Brown surrendered to police the next day, telling them his mother didn't raise him that way. Police let him sober up and interviewed him 2 days later. Police said Brown told them he needed money to stay in a downtown detox center, had nowhere to stay and was hungry, so he walked up the street and robbed the bank. $100, gets a 15-year sentence. And Bernie Madoff sits in his $7 million Midtown Manhattan home for stealing $50 billion. Yeah, well, sure, for sure. You know, I could wind up with 10 years in prison just by walking out right now and going to the nearest, not far from here, nearest convenience store, stealing a 12-pack of beer with my finger under my coat. And, yeah, you're damn right. But Bernie Madoff and some of the big-time thugs, the big guys, nah, nothing happens there. You know, Friday night is starting to turn into read the good emails night, but some of these are just worth sharing. Donald in Augusta, Georgia writes, Mike, I'm tired of hearing progressives gawking about how the American people finally got their moral compass and elected Obama president. I'm sorry, this has nothing to do with morals. It has more to do with Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs. In other words, the people had to lose something to make them understand the conservative mantra of greed is good, and paying low taxes is not the way to lead the country to prosperity. Now that this ideology has been thoroughly discredited, I suspect we will go with progressive policies until times are good again, and then, in true American fashion, the greed is good, high taxes bad crowd will gain power again. It'll be like the second American Great Depression never happened. Look around at all the blight, the homelessness, the joblessness, the war. It'll all be back again someday, because somehow Americans are incapable of remembering from one day to the next, and of course big business will busy themselves purging all the history books of this pitiful period in America, and therefore the next set of uninformed, anti-intellectual, hyper-religious, and yes, greedy Americans will come along and repeat the same mistakes that have now happened for the third time in American history. Please make sure your Molly fully understands how this mess happened, so there will be some people with the knowledge to help inform the millions who undoubtedly be misinformed by conservative parents who will, in true Limbaugh, Hannity, and O'Reilly fashion, blame liberals for the damage caused by these criminal conservatives. I don't know if it'll repeat again or not, Donald, because as Dylan said a long time ago, Bob, not Thomas, the times, they are a-changing, and if the continuing nationalization of goddamn near everything, frankly, I mean, what industry is not standing online with its handout looking for a handout from the government? Tell me one. Even, what did I read the other day? Even the porn industry is looking for some money? Really? Holy God. But everybody, I mean, you tell me who. The time is perfect for the implementation or at least the planting of social democracy or democratic socialism. Call it social democracy so it doesn't freak out your moderate friends. Social democracy. Nah, it doesn't sound right to me. The time is right for democratic socialism. It truly, truly, truly is. And that's what we're going to wind up with. So why not be upfront about it? Why not just come right out and say, yeah, the banks need to be nationalized. This needs to be nationalized. That needs to be nationalized. And just like so many liberals are afraid to use the word liberal, and they say, well, I'm a progressive. So many people are afraid to call this what it is, socialism. It's called, well, nationalizing. This is not socialism. We're nationalizing stuff. You know, for some reason, that's much more palatable for Americans, right? Well, it's not. Not socialism. Every single one of these bailouts that have not worked, 750, however many billions, trillions, quadrillions, quintillions, septillion, sextillion, octillion, nonillion, decillion, however many it's been and going to be, the rat bastards receiving it refuse to acknowledge, yeah, I'm standing here looking for a socialist rescue. While all this is swirling around, what Americans are going to hear is all this garbage mouth nonsense coming from pigs like Limbaugh and Hannity and O'Reilly and the rest of these people. Oh, there's nothing going on. This is the Obama recession anyway. Don't worry. Buckle up. Everything's cool. What are you talking about? Well, I don't think it's going to repeat, Donald, because I think that what we're heading into here is really catastrophic. And the reason I happen to think it's going to be worse than the Great Depression I used to hear my parents and grandparents talk about. I don't mean worse in a sense of, we'll be eating our neighbors, slaughtering the family pets. It's going to be worse in the sense that it's going to cause a complete breakdown. This is what this is what really freaks me out. A complete breakdown of all those interconnected social services that we all rely on, whether we're aware of it or not. Everything from roads and bridges to a Social Security check to unemployment to SSI to disability to children's health care. You know, all of that stuff that is in fact socialism. Is in fact socialism, and I'm afraid of as all this bankruptcy occurs, and if California is experiencing it, who's next? I'm afraid the breakdown is going to be so much bigger than it was in the 30s. Now, I do still believe that we can handle this, that we can do this. The first thing we have to do is remove from the public forum all right-wingers. They need to sit down. I'm not talking about putting them in camps or executing them, although that's not a bad idea. I'm talking about just eliminating them from any sort of discussion. Republicans, conservatives, right-wingers, neocons, any discussion about recovery should not include the people who did this to us to begin with. N'est-ce pas?
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Regarding California, Thomas in Mountain Ranch sent this in. Mike, I'm really getting worn out here in California. Why are we in this spot? Well, let me tell you. Reagan, 1966 to 74. George Dukmajian, two terms. Pete Wilson, two terms. Gray Davis, one term, 12 minutes. 12 minutes? Yes. When he said that taxes needed to be raised to cover the budget shortfalls, holy crap, you would have thought the sky was falling. True to form, for out here, a right-wing jackass in the form of Daryl Issa steps up to the plate and launches a freaking recall. Successful, too, because the selfish dumbasses that populate this state don't believe in the concept that we're all in this together. Why are we in this spot? Well, God damn it, all roads lead back to the sainted Ronald Reagan. Fortunately, we have the memory capacity of a medfly. and we can blissfully trundle along our way to permanent third world status. Thomas in Mount Rand. Well, yeah, okay. Thanks, Thomas. Yeah, I remember the recall of Gray Davis. Sure, and Daryl Issa, then didn't he get him? Isn't he a member of Congress from out there now? Didn't he get himself, or he tried, or he did, or whatever? Yeah, the great state of California that decided the gay people have to be constitutionally barred from getting married, and now it's tanking the whole state. Oh, it's not a cause and effect. I just thought I'd throw that in. But the whole thing is tanking. I just find that astonishing. I thought California was, well, California. Apparently it's not. Apparently California is not California. It's really Alabama. And that's really scary. I have something here that... I found pretty interesting. It's similar to something I've shared with you before, but this is from somebody named Steve Gilliard. This was written a couple of years ago. He says, I'm a fighting liberal. You know, I've studied history. I've read about America. And you know something? If it weren't for liberals, we'd be living in a dark, evil country, far worse than anything Bush could conjure up. A world where children were told to pee on the side of the road because they weren't fit to pee in an all-white outhouse, where women had to get back-alley abortions, and where rape was a joke, unless the criminal was black, whereupon he was hanged from a tree and castrated. What has conservatism given America? A stable social order? A peaceful home life? Respect for law and order? No. Hell no. It hasn't given us anything we didn't have, and it wants to take away our freedoms. The Founding Fathers, as flawed as they were, slave owners and pornographers, smugglers and terrorists, understood one thing. A man's path to God needed no help from the state. Is the religion of these conservatives so fragile that they need the state to prop it up to tell us how to pray and think? Is that what they stand for? Is that their America? Conservatism plays on fear and thrives on lies and dishonesty. I grew up with honest, decent conservatives, and those people have been replaced by the party of greed. It is one thing to want less government interference and smaller fiscally responsible government. It is another thing entirely to be a corporate whore selling out to the highest bidder because the CEO fattens your campaign chest. They are building an America which cannot be sustained, one based on the benefit of the few at the cost of the many. The indifferent boss who hires too few people and works them to death or until they break down sick. Cheap labor capitalism has replaced common sense. Globalism, which is really a guise for exploitation, replaced fair trade, which is nothing like fair for the trapped semi-slaves in the Texas border towns, where hundreds of these women have been used as sex slaves and then apparently killed, the FBI powerless to do anything as a criminal sit in Mexico untouched by law. For the better part of a decade, the conservatives made liberal a dirty word. Well, it isn't. It represents the best and most noble nature of what America stands for. Equitable government services, old age pensions, health care, education, fair trials, humane imprisonment. It is the heart and soul of what made America different and better than other countries. Not only an escape from oppression, but the opportunity to thrive in land free of tradition and the repression that tradition can bring. We offered a democracy which didn't enshrine the rich and made them feel they had an obligation to their workers. Bush and the people around him disdain that. They think, by accident of birth and circumstance, that they were meant to rule the world, and those who did not agree should suffer. And he goes on, and this was written 5 years ago. 5 years ago. It was the liberals who opposed the Nazis while the conservatives were plotting to get their own brown shirts or fund Hitler. It was the liberals who warned about Spain and fought there, who joined the Royal Air Force to fight the Germans, who brought democracy to Germany and Japan. Let's not forget it was the conservatives who opposed defending America until the Germans sank our ships. They would have done nothing as Britain came under Nazi control. It was they who supported Joe McCarthy and his baseless, drink-fueled claims. Without liberals, there would be no modern America, just a Nazi satellite state. And on and on and on. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Life is funny. Skies are sunny. Bees make honey.
try to bust them, try to cuss them. The cops want someone to bust down on Orleans Avenue. Another day, another dollar, another wall, another towel went up where the homeless had their homes. So we prayed a bit.
Got the Flying Monkey Right Blues? Here's the cure, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, regarding, I was reading from Steve Gilliard, Irish Dave writes in, Mike, I'm sure others would tell you this, but Steve, a great blogger, passed away more than a year ago. Another young black man dead too soon. No, I didn't know that. Thanks for the information, Irish Dave. And Lou in Fayetteville, Arkansas writes, Mike, the only positive act by Bush and his cretins was destroying this nation to such a degree that we have only one direction to move, and that's upward. A convention of all the minor parties, political parties, willing to put aside their own egos and determining what that they can work together on, and determining what they can work together on, such as saving our home, the planet, could be a good start, if possible. I'm glad that others were able to see the ironic comparison between that courageous pilot who knew his job and the psychopath Bush, who didn't, Lou in Fayetteville. By the way, the pilot was, a couple people emailed me, it was an Airbus, not a Boeing 737. Oh, here's another. Steve Gilliard passed away June 2nd at the age of 2007, the age of 42. He developed his blog writing chops on Daily Kos, and left Daily Kos to found the new blog. Well, thanks to everybody, Bob, for sending it, and everybody else for all the... I didn't know this this man, this writer, until Bob Alexander sent me that bit. I'd never heard of him. My loss. My loss. The... There's a list circulating across the internet from AmericanProgressAction.org. The 43 people who helped make Bush the worst ever. You know, he's the 43rd president, right? And it gives little thumbnail sketches and reasons why, which would take me all night to share with you. But listen to this list. Dick Cheney, Karl Rove, Alberto Gonzalez, Donald Rumsfeld, Michael Brown, the FEMA guy, Paul Wolfowitz, David Addington, Cheney's Cheney, Stephen Johnson, who was considered to be the Alberto Gonzalez of the environment, Douglas Feith, John Bolton, John Yoo, Ari Fleischer, John Ashcroft, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, L. Paul Bremer, remember the guy that took over the Coalition Provisional Authority? Bradley Schlotzman, the in the Justice Department, in the Civil Rights Division. J. Stephen Griles, former energy lobbyist, number two official in the Interior Department. Condoleezza Rice, Scooter Libby, Monica Goodling. She was with the Justice Department, a graduate of Pat Robertson's Regent University. Alfonso Jackson, that's a name I couldn't think of the other night, Housing and Urban Development Secretary. If that rat's nest of corruption is ever uncovered, Alfonso Jackson is going to be spending some time in jail, I think. Michael Hayden, Director of the National Security Agency. Loretta Doan, never heard of her. The former head of the General Services Administration, who doled out no-bid contracts to Republicans. Gail Norton, of course, the Secretary of the Interior. Lester Crawford, former FDA, Food and Drug Administration Commissioner, indefinitely postponed non-prescription sales of emergency contraception over the objections of staff scientists who declared the pill safe. Oh, yeah, that was one of these... little religious right piglets. Harriet Myers, remember her. Hans von Spakovsky, originally a political appointee in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department. Oh, that's right. He was another one. Tommy Franks, of course, head of the U.S. Central Command for 3 years. He oversaw Osama bin Laden's great escape from Afghanistan. Yeah. Thomas Scully, chief administrator for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services. He was the head negotiator on the Medicare prescription drug bill. And Scully threatened to fire the chief actuary of that agency if the actuary revealed that Bush's Medicare Part D legislation, quote, would cost 25% to 50% more than the Bush administration's public estimates. Julie McDonald, Interior Department appointee. William Haynes, former General Counsel, General Counsel of Defense Department. He was one of the guys that tossed the Geneva Convention aside. David Safavian, twice convicted, or tried and convicted for his role in the Jack Abramoff scandal. James Connaughton, chairman of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. William Lutai, former Navy officer and Cheney aide. Susan Orr, assistant deputy secretary for population affairs from the Family Research Council. Christopher Cox, that thug, California congressman who wound up destroying the functions of the Securities and Exchange Commission. Elliot Abrams, you know him, a convicted mass murderer, pardoned by Bush's daddy. Philip Cooney, former oil lobbyist, who served as chief of staff of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. Colin Powell, Elaine Chao, labor secretary, married to, she's the beard for Mitch McConnell, the gay senator from Kentucky. Julie Myers, who is she? Oh, she was head of Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Wade Horn, Assistant Secretary for Community Initiatives, Department of Health and Human Services, funneled millions of taxpayer dollars into right-wing abstinence-only programs. George Deutsch. Oh, that was that 20-something punk who went to work for NASA and told the scientists working there that what they were putting out was unacceptable because it was politically incorrect. And then, of course, that's 43 of them. The dishonorable mentions go to Bush appointees who didn't quite make the list, included a child pornography aficionado, a patron of hookers, a shoplifter, a mail fraudster, an operator of illegal horse gambling ring, and a CIA official who took bribes in the form of prostitutes. This came in courtesy of our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy. Thanks, Sharon. You can find this at Progress at AmericanProgressAction.org. And the thumbnail sketches of these monsters is, it's just unbelievable where these people came from. You know, George Bush standing out there last night with his farewell address, with that dung-eating smirk on his face, who... I think Oberman, on his program tonight on MSNBC, went down another list of all the incompetencies and crimes and illegalities and deceptions and hypocrisies that this rat bastard perpetrated while he was in the Oval Office after having stolen the presidency to begin with. It's just unbelievable. And every time I think about why Bill Clinton was impeached, I just want to start killing anything within a 100-mile radius. I just want to open fire, you know? I feel like somebody in the IDF. That's how insane I become when I start thinking about, well, they got Clinton for what? Oh, that's right. Yeah, he and Monica. Okay. And this guy, this George Bush bastard. And then when I think how the Democrats who had every opportunity to nail this son of a bitch as the Constitution requires, and they didn't. And they let him walk. And President Barack Obama apparently is going to let him walk. Oh, God. Paul Krugman in today's New York Times. Column, Forgive and Forget? ? He says, if we don't have an inquest into what happened during the Bush years, and nearly everyone has taken Mr. Obama's remarks on ABC last Sunday to mean that we won't. It means that those who hold power are indeed above the law because they don't face any consequences when they abuse their power. He says, let's be clear, what we're talking about here, it's not just torture and illegal wiretapping. The fact is that the Bush administration's abuses extended from environmental policy to voting rights, and most of the abuses involved using the power of government to reward political friends and publish political enemies. It just goes on and on. I mean, my God, if the list of this bastard's crimes and the crimes of those people who were so willing to do for him what Monica did for Clinton, if that list were ever put together, Jesus, God, it would take a week to read it. And Barack Obama is going to repeat what Clinton did and let all these criminal sons of bitches walk? Really? Are you going to do that, President Obama? Are you going to do that?
You measure your peace with guns. Your progress is in megatons. Well, who's left when the war is won? A soldier of a misfortune. A soldier of an angry call. Soldiers on foreign soil. Well, we're not here to fight your war. We know what you're fighting for. Oh, this world is not your.
Making the pie higher, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Time before the hour, we're going to take your calls when we come back. All right, everybody's coming up with people to add to the list. John in Los Angeles says, don't forget the pig man. Did more damage than many of the others on the list. Limbaugh. Kate says, Sandra Day O'Connor, who started it all with her vote. She gave him to us on a platter. I'm sure we can come up with more than 43. Have you ever seen such a gang of killers, deceivers, liars, cheats? Have you? I in the highest level of government, I haven't. And we've had some notoriously bad executive branches over the course of the history of this country. But this one, I think, really outshines, in a manner of speaking, them all. Meanwhile, as USA Today, oh, my God, you're going to quote them. USA Today was talking about Americans believe that Barack Obama is going to deliver. They say Americans are as down as they've been in decades about the state of the country. Even though apparently we are expressing soaring confidence that Obama will be able to turn things around, USA Today Gallup poll finds stratospheric expectations for the incoming president that his own supporters acknowledge may be unrealistic. USA Today says the majority of those surveyed say Obama will be able to achieve every one of 10 major campaign promises, from doubling the production of alternative energy to ensuring that all children have health insurance coverage. 7 in 10 predict the nation will be better off when Obama's term ends in 4 years. Now, of course, this kind of support gives Barack Obama the political capital that George Bush thought he had when he got 51% of the vote. Now, don't email me. I know he probably got 46%, but it came up 51%. I understand. I understand about everything that was stolen, but let's just go with the stipulate he got 51% because it's over. It's done with. But he got 51%, and he walked around with his thumb in his ass for weeks afterward, talking about, I got political capital. I'm gonna spend my political capital. I won the election. I'm the goddamn president. I'm the decider. I got capital. Well, if you really want to see what political capital is, it's what Barack Obama starts his term with. With this kind of support. He's going to need it. He's absolutely going to need it. According to USA Today, the people surveyed distinguish among his campaign promises, ranking some as more crucial than others. Their clear priorities are the issues that hit home. On a list of campaign promises, five pocketbook issues take the five top spots. They are expanding health care for children, reducing health care costs. They include doubling the production of alternative energy. What else? 7 of 10 say it is, quote, very important, end quote, to them personally that he keeps those promises. His pledges to cut income taxes for working families, pass a stimulus package that will build and repair bridges, roads, and schools are also among the top five issues. Withdrawing most U.S. combat troops from Iraq ranks only sixth. Well, there's a reason for that, and the reason is the only people who are suffering in this country from Bush's murderous wars of opportunity are the people who are contributing family members to go fight. The rest of us are unconscious, totally unconscious about this. Let me ask you real quick, how many Americans were killed in the past week in Iraq and or Afghanistan? Quick now, quick. No, I can't answer it either. How many troops do we have in either country right now? Come on, quick, quick. Nope, I can't answer that one either. Who's in charge? Quick, give me, you know, back in the horrible days of Vietnam, everyone knew about William Westmoreland. He was a Nazi dictator son of a bitch who believed in just absolute wholesale slaughter. Who's in charge now? David Petraeus? Really? Where is he? Who's in charge of Iraq? Who's in charge of Afghanistan? Do you know? Quick. Oh, I know a couple of you do. But I can't tell you either. I don't know who's in. Isn't that Nazi Marine-crazed person, in that great big 8-foot-tall Goliath who looks like he just stepped out of a Frankenstein movie? Isn't he in charge of military operations for the United States in Iraq now? You know what I'm talking about. What the hell's his name? Don't email it to me. Don't. I'm just saying. Ranked last on the list of 10, according to USA Today, the 10 issues that Americans want to see Barack Obama fulfill, and the ones that inspired furious debates during the campaign and in the nation's editorial pages, is lifting restrictions on government funding of embryonic stem cell research. Closing the U.S. military prison for terror suspects at Guantanamo and making it easier for labor unions to organize. But see, the right-wing rat bastards who control media in this country, they would have had us believe that, oh, we got to stop embryonic stem cell research because, you know, that spews babies all over the floor. Most Americans saw through that. The people who passed the laws didn't. Yeah, let's not do that. That's science. That's biology. Let's not take these little blastocysts. Let's not take them. Those are babies. Yeah. Okay. How many times did you hear that over the past couple of years? That ever since Bill Clinton was elected. For the 8 years Bill Clinton was president, something like 40 million children had been murdered, right? Jesus Christ, I hate these people on the right. I just hate them so bad sometimes. It's all I can do not to give myself ulcers. We'll be back after the break here on Nova M Radio and take your phone calls. So get in here. Come on, let's go, let's go. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Anybody want to call in tonight? The number is 800-989-1480. And I am fully aware I have not touched on the Palestinian issue yet tonight. I'll mention a little bit about that. It's almost too much to. I'm kind of caught. I'm trapped. I feel like some kind of. I feel a sense of immorality if I don't talk about it, because it is a horror that's continuing. And I also feel that there's only so much of that horror that I can expect the people who listen to this program to absorb. So I'm kind of caught on the horns of a dilemma here, I believe is the expression. In the meantime, Alice in Arkansas has two more to add to that list of 43. Nancy, impeachment is off the table, Pelosi, and gutless Harry Reid. And by the way, Alice in Arkansas, she's got a great website here. It's Healin Hollers. Have you all been there? Healin, as in healing, but with the G off because this is the South. Healin, H-E-A-L-I-N dash, Hollers, H-O-L-L-E-R-S, which is Southern for a hollow. You know, you got your mountains and you got your hollers. But it's an eclectic little business in the old Ozarks. It's called Healin Hollers. And she's got everything there. She's got everything there. Salves, oils, balms, creams, soaps, books. All kinds of stuff. Check it out. Would you go ahead. Just for the sheer hell of it. Check it out. It's called Healin-Hollers.com. Healinhollers.com.
You think it's cold there?
In Healin Hollers? Business is in Old Joe, Arkansas. That's the name of the town, Old Joe, Arkansas. Don't ask. I have no idea.
Can we get Ian back on to talk about the Matador Grill?
I've been to Old Joe.
You've been to Old Joe?
I've been to Old Joe, Arkansas. You drive through there when you go through. It's in the Ozarks.
See what I tell you.
I know.
Sorry, thanks.
Yeah, go back to sleep, Ian. Healin Hollers. Check it out. This is a fun website. Healin-Hollers.com. Especially if you need any salves or oils or balms. No, I'm serious. Check it out. Healin-Hollers.com. The only Israeli-Palestinian story that I can do tonight is one that is just shocking. It's from Daily Kos. And it's a clip. There's a video clip posted there of an anchor, television anchor in Israel, Shlomi Eldar. And he's holding a cell phone and he's talking with Dr. Abu El Aish on the other end of the phone. Dr. El Aish has been a reliable source in reporting what is going on in Gaza. And Shlomi Eldar, the Israeli anchor, is he's gotten several reports from this doctor. The doctor is a gynecologist, Palestinian gynecologist from Beit Lahia in the northeast corner of the Gaza Strip. And he works at Israel's largest hospital, Tel HaShomer, near Tel Aviv. He's a Palestinian MD, gynecologist. And he has been stranded at home during the war. Israel's Channel 10 television has regularly interviewed him by phone about the situation in Gaza. On one occasion, a tank gun was aimed at his home, and Israeli media intervened to save him. But the horror is, while he is being interviewed by Channel 10 in Israel, by Shlomi Eldar, two of his daughters are killed by Israeli fire. There's a clip at Daily Kos The clip starts automatically playing after a few seconds if you go there. The article comes after a short commercial, and then what you see in the clip is Israeli anchor Shlomi Eldar holding a cell phone with Dr. Abu El-Aish on the other side howling with misery. A tank shell has just hit his home and immediately killed three of his children. Israeli television apparently cut off the first seconds when the shell actually hit. But it's just too much to do. As removed as we are from this, in a physical sense, certainly not in a sense of morality, because I don't think anyone who has a moral sense in America, Jew or Gentile, is removed from these killings that are occurring. But as removed as we are, it's almost too much. When I saw this today, I just literally could not handle it. Eldar, the TV anchor, says, "We have on the line Dr. Abu El-Aish. We have been talking with him over the past period. His home was just shelled. His family is wounded. Maybe I can replay ... And then you hear Dr. Abu El-Aish saying, screaming, "No one can get to us. Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi," which is Arabic for "My God." He continues to cry throughout while Eldar talks to the audience. Eldar says that the TV anchor guy on Channel 10 in Israel says, "They killed his family. They killed his family. I'm a bit overwhelmed too because," and he starts to cry on camera. Dr. Abu El-Aish is a Tel Hashomer physician. And then he says to the doctor, "Dr. Abu El-Aish, we are now in the studio." And back to the audience, he says, "He kept fearing his family would get hurt. Once this week, he went on air to Gabi Gazette," another anchor, "because this was the only way to," apparently Eldar here is referring to the only way to get the tanks turned away from his house. "In short, he's now hit. Who was hurt, Abu El-Aish?" And then you hear screaming, "My girls, Ya Allah, Ya Allah!" Screaming, screaming, and then the anchor, Eldar, Shlomi Eldar, says, "He has eight children, whom he has protected throughout the war at his home in Beit Lahia. Maybe the only thing we can do is ask someone who can, maybe in the IDF, Abu El-Aish, can you tell me where your house is? Maybe they will enable ambulances to get there." And then you hear this doctor screaming, save them, but they are dead already. They were hit in the head. It was in their heads. They died on the spot, on the spot. Shlomi, Ya Allah, what have we done? What have we done? They killed my family." And then you hear screams in the background. An IDF infantry regiment was responsible for the shelling. They have quickly claimed that there was sniper fire from the doctor's house. And as reported here, previous claims during this war, most notably with the United Nations shelter bombed a week ago, killing 40 civilians, have all turned out to be bogus. They appear to be little more than a standard cover, all designed to hold up until public attention goes elsewhere. Ya Rabbi, Ya Rabbi, Ya Allah, Ya Allah, they have killed my family, they have killed my girls.
To bring them home from anywhere, I live my life, my love I gave them, to guide them through this world of strife. I hope great
And we're a country of deep compassion. We care. One of the great things about America, one of the beauties of our country, is that when we see a young, innocent child blown up by an IED, we cry.
You cry.
This is the end, my only friend, the end.
Yeah, that's a beautiful thing about this country, folks. When we see that, when we cause it, directly or indirectly, collateral damage and all, but when we see it, we cry. We cry. This is a Daily Kos. The author is Assaf, A-S-S-A-F. That's the best I can give you. I don't know how to navigate Daily Kos site. I get lots of stuff from there because people send it to me, but I haven't spent a lot of time on the Daily Kos site. But if you want to go there, Daily Kos, and if there's a search engine, which there must be, Assaf wrote that. He is the diarist who is putting this up. There is a video. I think the video shows the conversation, the clip between Aldar, Shlomi Aldar, the Israeli anchor, and the doctor who, as he is being interviewed, has a tank shell hit his house and kill three of his daughters. And, I've got a whole stack of stuff here, a whole stack of stuff about what is going on. I don't know what to do with it. I don't, Michael Lerner, who is the, founder of Tikkun, he's the editor of Tikkun magazine, Rabbi Michael Lerner, has a piece in the Times of London headlined, "It Breaks My Heart to See Israel's Stupidity." What else do I have here? Jewish activist, early this morning, no, I guess it was yesterday, in Los Angeles, chained themselves to the entrance of the Israeli consulate, blocked the driveway to the parking structure, blocking all traffic in and out of the building. Their statement, Lenny Potash, a 72-year-old protester who was cuffed to eight other activists blocking the driveway, said, "We send a clear message to the world that L.A. Jews are part of the global majority in opposition to the Israeli siege of Gaza." There were ten Jews who chained themselves together to block the driveway. They were joined by, according to what I have here, 50 other protesters who chanted, "LA Jews say end the siege of Gaza and not in our name. We will not be silent." Protesters, all Jewish, also held up signs reading, "Israeli consulate closed for war crimes." Robin Ellis, a registered nurse who also risked arrest to block the consulate, said, "We succeeded today in letting Jews and other Americans of conscience know that it is safe to speak out against the policies of the Israeli government and that the Israeli lobby does not speak for everyone. We are committed to escalating nonviolent activities in the future to end the siege and win justice for Palestinians."
I just have to ask a question. At what point does the UN or somebody, some international organization, step in and do something? I mean, why can't UN security forces form human shields around the perimeter?
Let me tell you why. In order to do that, in order to send UN troops anywhere, it takes a unanimous vote by the UN Security Council, which has 5 permanent members and 10 rotating members. The 5 permanent members includes the United States. Any attempt to do that, to send troops, would be vetoed by the United States. It will not happen.
But there's no way that with any kind of legitimacy the state of Israel can claim that they are defending themselves in this action. You know, when I keep hearing Bush and other world leaders or anyone say, well, they have a right to defend themselves. Well, of course they do. There's no defense here. What can be done? At what point are they stopped? What is the end game here? They can't kill all of them. What is the point?
In L.A., this group of activists are an ad hoc multi-generational group of L.A. Jewish residents, including members of the recently founded International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network. They shared a commitment to ending the Israeli siege on Gaza and an end to Israeli apartheid. Hannah Howard, a local member of the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network, said, quote, "We are shocked and outraged at Israel's latest act of violent aggression against the Palestinian people, killing over 1,000 people, including 300 women and children, bombing schools and mosques, and then calling it self-defense. That is the worst kind of hypocrisy. It amounts to war crimes." She goes on to say, "We shut down the Israeli consulate today because as Jewish people, we cannot allow business as usual while violence is being done in our name." Gideon Levy, writing for Haaretz, "The IDF has no mercy for the children in Gaza nursery schools. The fighting in Gaza is war deluxe. Compared with previous wars, it is child's play. Pilots bombing unimpeded, as if on practice runs. Tank and artillery soldiers shelling houses and civilians from their armored vehicles. Combat engineering troops destroying entire streets in their ominous protected vehicles without facing serious opposition. A large, broad army is fighting against a helpless population and a weak, ragged organization that has fled the conflict zones and is barely putting up a fight. All this must be said openly before we begin exulting in our heroism and victory. The war is also child's play because of its victims. About a third of those killed in Gaza have been children, 311, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry, 270, according to B'Tselem Human Rights Group, out of the 1,000 total killed as of Wednesday. Around 1,600 of the 45 wounded also have been children, according to figures from the UN. Which says the number of children killed has tripled since the ground operation began. This is too large a proportion by any humanitarian or ethical standard. It is enough to look at the pictures coming from Shifa Hospital to see how many burned, bleeding, and dying children now lie there. History has seen innumerable brutal wars take countless lives, but the horrifying proportion of this war, a third of the dead being children, has not been seen in recent memory. God does not show mercy on the children at Gaza's nursery schools, and neither does the Israeli Defense Forces. That's how it goes when war is waged in such a densely populated area with a population so blessed with children. About half of Gaza's residents are under 15. No pilot or soldier went to war to kill children. Not one among them intended to kill children, but it also seems neither did they intend not to kill them. They went to war after the IDF had already killed 952 Palestinian children and adolescents since May 2000. The public's shocking indifference to these figures is incomprehensible. 1,000 propagandists and apologists cannot excuse this criminal killing. The children killed in Gaza did not die because they were used as human shields or because they worked for Hamas. They were killed because the IDF bombed, shelled, or fired at them, their families, or their apartment buildings. That is why the blood of Gaza's children is on our hands, not on Hamas's hands, and we will never be able to escape that responsibility. A child who has seen his house destroyed, his brother killed, and his father humiliated will not forgive. The last time I was allowed to visit Gaza, in November 2006, I went to the Indira Gandhi Nursery School in Beit Lahia. The school children drew what they had seen the previous day. An IDF missile striking their school bus, killing their teacher in front of their eyes. They were in shock. It is possible some of them have now been killed or wounded themselves. This is from Gideon Levy, a Haaretz correspondent, writing today, I believe. Jesus, God, or somebody. I don't know how do you don't have to email or call in about this, but how do you stand this? I don't care who you are, man, woman, gay, straight, black, white, Jew, Gentile. It doesn't make any difference. How do you stand this? I can't. I can't handle this. You want to know how I deal with this? When I finish these topics or these letters or these diaries or these reports, I have to, and the show's over, I have to blank my mind, literally. Can you do that? I can. I have learned how to do that. I blank it out. I don't know where Israel is. I don't know what Palestinian means. I don't know what burned and mutilated children have to do with anything. It means nothing. It goes away. I must draw a dark black curtain in my consciousness. I cannot deal with this. How do you? I have children. I've had children. I have grandchildren. I have a 4.5-year-old. This is not right. This is not right.
Oh, despair. Don't show your tears to your oppressor. Don't show your tears. Try not to cry.
David's flew Goliath, this very same place that we'd be at, passing through the same time, this land been a victim of countless crimes, from crusaders, mongers, to the present aggression, then the Franks, now even the cruel oppression, if these walls could speak, imagine, what would they...
Children of Gaza, simple words cannot explain. Children of Gaza, how come they don't feel your pain?
see. They stand as a token of injustice and foul play. But tell me, did they?
It's about 14 before the hour. Well, that wasn't very professional, was it, Malloy, huh? Thanks to our engineer, Ian Huff, who also answered your calls. Ben Birch, our technical advisor. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Program's ethical advisors are Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. Bruce Enberg is our economic advisor, and executive producer is Catherine Bay. Now, Reg sent me the coordinates here. Just go to the main page, the opening page of Daily Kos that shows the diary, or it shows the entries on the site. It's on the right side. The menu, there's a menu on the right side of the opening page that shows entries on the site. So go to dailykos.com, and on the right side you'll see the menu. And you'll find it there. Click on Palestinian Doctor's Daughters Killed While Is Interviewed on Israeli TV by Asaf, A-S-S-A-F. So if you want to see this, and God only knows why you would, but, yeah, no, I understand. I looked at this video. Palestinian Doctor's Daughters Killed While He Is Interviewed on Israeli TV by Asaf. So if you want to... I don't know why the Daily Kos site is confusing to me, but it really is. It really is. I can pretty much deal with most elements of current events or the topics that come up, except where it concerns kids. I just can't handle that. I remember during the Lebanese Civil War, I've said this before on the air, I don't know, maybe you've heard it before, but back when I first was working at CNN in the early 80s, and things were a lot more primitive then where it concerned satellite feeds and bureaus overseas for CNN and so on and so on and so on. But at certain times of the day, we would get video feeds from Lebanon that were disconcerting at best and horrific at worst. I remember I was in there one Saturday working a weekend shift, writing, and the senior producer, the executive producer, called us into the satellite feed room, such as it was 25 years ago, and wanted us to watch the raw video that was coming in, video that would never make it onto CNN because it was too explicit. But the supervising producer wanted us in. There were five, one of the writers was Christiane Amanpour. There were six of us on that writing team that in those early days. And anyway, the six of us sat there. Christiane speaks Farsi, as well as, I think she also speaks French, and probably at this point, quite a bit of Arabic. But the feed came in, it was from Lebanon, and for some reason, I guess it was an Iranian crew, perhaps, that was sending the feed, but Christiane was doing some rough translation of the audio feed that was coming, along with the video, and the horrific part of it was, and I'll never forget this. I mean, if I live to be 1,000, which I won't, I'll never forget this. The scenes that were fed over the whatever it was, the satellite feed that day, all those years ago from the Lebanese Civil War, was from a children's or from a morgue that was handling the bodies of children who had been blown up in that Civil War, and. Those pictures, you may not want to hear this. I mean, I guess I should put like little disclaimers out so that people can say, no, that's enough for tonight, Malloy, goodbye. The scenes that we saw that day that were being fed were scenes in a children's morgue, children's section of the morgue, where bodies of children were brought in, and the workers in the morgue, with no disrespect intended to the children, they were operating under very primitive conditions in there. They had what you and I would call garden hoses. I don't know where they were attached. And they were dressed in, the workers, the adult men, were dressed in long rubber aprons. And they would hold up the bodies of these children by their feet or by their hands. These were dead bodies. These are corpses. And take the garden hose and wash off of these little corpses the blood, the gravel, the dirt, the stones, whatever could be washed off to prepare them for burial. And if you know anything about tradition in the Middle East, whether it's Jew or Arab, immediate burial is absolutely required, very quick burial. So these were quick operations to just to clean off the bodies a bit before the bodies were handed out the door to the screaming parents. And I remember sitting in that satellite feed room watching this. And again, the supervising producer insisted that we do this so that when we wrote the stories that would then be broadcast that Saturday afternoon on CNN, that we would have an understanding of the civil war in Lebanon. And that it would not just be something from the BBC or Reuters or AP or UPI or whatever news services that were available back then. But I and two of the other writers, whose names I'm not going to mention because it, you know, had to leave the room because it became overwhelming, just goddamn overwhelming. It hit me the same way as the first time I saw old, grainy, 16-millimeter film of the dead and dying from Auschwitz and Bergen-Belsen and Sobibor and Treblinka and all those Nazi death camps. And I can remember as a late teenager when I first saw those films. You know, you've seen that. You've seen some of them, I'm sure. But those films or videos, whatever the hell, I don't even remember anymore. I guess they would have been videos, right? That we saw that day from Lebanon was just too much. It was just absolutely, completely overwhelming. And I told myself then, if you're going to be in this business, you better get used to it, pal, because this is, you know, I mean, this is not downtown Atlanta. This is downtown Beirut or wherever it was. I just knew it came from Lebanon. And I was no spring chicken back then. I'm talking only 25 years ago. And, you know, I'd been around, right? But nothing like that. I'd never been exposed to those kinds of images. Not in an immediate sense. This was stuff happening for real right now. This was not history. This was not something from World War II or World War I or, you know, this was like now, right now, going on in that part of the world. So. And the pictures that I have seen of the Holocaust, of children, Jesus Christ, children being marched through these barbed wire encased corridors outside, little kids being marched with their mothers. The men have already been separated. Being marched around this way and around that way into these concrete structures to have a shower, and knowing what, you know, what we know now, what these little kids, and then to know about 325 children in Gaza in the past 2 weeks who have been killed, who've been blown to pieces, who have watched their parents die, I mean, on and on. I mean, what in the goddamn hell is going on here? What, I mean, how can this be happening? How can this be happening? This is Israel defending itself. Really. Well, I apologize for leaving this program on such a bummer tonight. I really do. I really do. So, just something about that that story about the Palestinian doctor being interviewed by Israeli television anchor watching his children being killed in front of his eyes. It's just, I don't know, man. I can't do that. Can you? Can you do that? Can you handle that? Yeah. Oh, here's some happy music. I'll see you Monday. Have a good weekend. Keep it lit. Have a great weekend. Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.